Hello and welcome back. It's episode 67 of Cambro Conversations with your host, Colin Campbell. And today's conversation, we are talking about recovering from burnout as a high achiever and living your values, as well as much, much more. To do so, we are joined by Rebecca Hollis, who's a writer, speaker, content creator, and the head of customer service at ScoreApp. Within this conversation, expect to learn about Rebecca's career journey, her achievements within the branding agency space, as well as how her sporting background led to her success. Interestingly, this sporting interest that Rebecca had led to Rebecca working in what many would consider her dream job. However, Rebecca explains how this high-speed, high-impact career of hers led to a burnout, and how fellow aspirational high achievers like you who listen to this podcast can avoid that and understand the lessons we can learn from somebody who's gone as far as having a burnout within their career. Importantly, Rebecca talks to us about the growth tank method, which is what she has built off the back of this experience, and we move on to cover why building a personal brand enables you to be redundancy, pandemic, and foolproof when it comes to building your career and your aspirations. Finally, within the podcast, we talk about how you can feel Johnny Five alive, which is a phrase that Rebecca has lived by for much of her life. I'm delighted to say that today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by MTN Coaching. Founder of MTN Coaching, David Hatt, has appeared in the podcast twice now, sharing his wisdom in all things business and fitness. David heads up a team of six coaches who come together to form Scotland's leading online fitness transformation service, with a variety of different products and services that can help you to lose fat, build muscle, all while improving your lifestyle and overall health. If you're interested in working with MTN, you can inquire at mtncoaching.co.uk and the link will be in the show notes. Before we dive into this episode, I want to say a massive thank you for the continued support for the podcast. We continue to grow and have a fantastic positive impact, and that is all that I can ask. In fact, the other thing that I will ask you to do is, if you're new here or you haven't had a chance to do so yet, please navigate to the subscribe or the follow button on whatever app you are on, so you do not miss any of the new weekly uploads that are coming at you thick and fast. Let's get into the conversation with Rebecca Hollis. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Cambro Conversations. And today we are covering a range of topics, all the way from high achievement in career and success, all the way to burnout. To do so, we are joined by Rebecca Hollis, who is a writer, speaker, content creator, and the head of customer success at ScoreApp. Rebecca, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Colin. Nice to be here. Thank you so much.
Delighted to have you on, and I've given you a little bit of an intro there, but it's always nice to hear it from the horse's mouth. So tell us a bit about your background, Rebecca.
So a little bit about my background. I am I have been mostly in the entrepreneurial world. I've had a couple of businesses in my 20s predominantly, and I have really been around branding. I work for Saatchi & Saatchi, the advertising agency, and they have, and my light has just gone off, and Saatchi & Saatchi are basically the creators, the branding agency themselves. They are the agency that have really been the brains behind the likes of Cadbury's and Toyota and stuff like that. So I've worked with them. I had a couple of really successful campaigns throughout my 20s, which kind of got me into that world. I then went and pursued a career actually in the space of cheerleading, which has been my passion for years. And I managed to localize the company, which was a huge cheerleading company over in the UK and Ireland. And I headed that up right from the ground up. I then unfortunately went through a period of burnout probably about 4 years ago. And then over the last couple of years, I've been kind of working my way back into the space, dipping my toe in lots and lots of different things. And I'm now currently working in the tech startup space, in building incredible growth and traction there, and also the personal development space with my company, The Growth Tank Method, as well. Just to give you a little brief history there, because people can go into a huge amount.
That's a nice flavor to start us off, Rebecca. And like you say, you've from my understanding of you and my research of you when I was approaching you to come on via LinkedIn, mm-hmm. you can see that you've been somebody that was, by all measures and metrics, a successful person at quite a young age in terms of their career, working for big businesses like Saatchi & Saatchi, involved mm-hmm. in exciting projects and deals and the kind of stuff that gets a lot of the high achievers that listen to this podcast out of bed. Mm-hmm. But you kind of went through a period, like you say, where it maybe went a little bit too far, and right. you've experienced this burnout. But before we get to that, you said that one of your passions was cheerleading. Was that something that you were involved in as a kid then?
Yeah. So I've been involved with competitive cheerleading. And since I think I was 11 years old when I first started, I actually found it when I first went to secondary school. And it really, for me, it became something that was, I was always into sports as a child. I mean, people that tend to be kind of go-getters and high achievers tend to love to feel a part of something, that feeling of achievement. And that is, I think, something that really was a foundational piece for me when I was growing up. It taught me teamwork and it gave me great confidence and aiming towards a goal, which is fantastic to do. But I actually made the national team. So I was on Team England. So I kind of got to the really the top level. And actually now, all these years later, it's come full circle. And I now actually coach Team England cheerleading with the coaching staff over there. I'm a part of the team. So it's really, yeah, it's quite exciting. But it's something that I think that was a real foundational piece for who I am as a person, and actually bringing that into what I do now has definitely been something that I think, had that not have happened there, I wouldn't have had the some of the foundations for what I did professionally in my career.
It strikes me so often when I speak to people in this space that a fitness and sporting background as a child, or at least as a young adult starting mm-hmm. to develop that passion, quite often overlaps. And a lot of the time, one of my questions I'm asked is, well, how do you fit fitness in alongside your career and whatnot? And for me, it's always a bit of a no-brainer. Like, the best version of Colin Campbell is the one that is training 5-6 days a week, nailing his nutrition, and that comes from a background of playing rugby and being into sports and whatnot. So I guess it's no surprise when you say there that it put in place a lot of the foundations for the kind of person that you are now.
Absolutely. And even now, I am big into fitness. It doesn't matter how busy I am, I know that I have to make sure that I exercise all the time. You know, I know we're going to speak about it a bit later, but in some of the times when I maybe wasn't investing in myself and I wasn't investing in my own personal development, my own personal growth, when I took my foot off the gas in one area of my life, it affected my professional area of my life. And I think that's something that I'm very, very conscious of now. And that without having the everyday, constant day in, day out, making sure that I've got that professional side of me, as well as that personal, making sure you look after myself, it all is one and it all kind of rolls in together.
Yeah, I think the audience will be nodding along, listening to their pods right now, or their car stereo, wherever they are. Now, this was obviously a passion of yours, as you said, cheerleading from a young age and competitive mm-hmm. level. You did your thing with Saatchi & Saatchi. You progressed to a level within that space, mm-hmm. and then you got the gig as, what was the title at UK Cheerleading?
So I was head of UK and Ireland for a big global cheerleading company, $1 billion company. They were localizing in the UK and Ireland. So essentially what the role was is we were really starting, although we had a big brand, I mean, the company was the Nike of cheerleading. So it wasn't, people knew about it. They had it in, you know, in brand awareness, but there was actually, you know, we had to really create our kind of customer base from the ground up, because to get anything sent over from the US, it made it so much more expensive. So we had to work out ways of bringing the costings down, growing the customer base and making sure we facilitated that, and then growing, being able to grow the team to facilitate this as well. So that was kind of my role from the ground up. Did that for about 4 years. It was definitely an industry that I cared about, that I'm passionate about, of course, and I cared deeply about the customers there. And I think that's why it grew so quickly, because I had a real affinity with of the customer base and I understood them. I knew who they were, which is actually something that I have definitely taken with me into my next couple of ventures, because to really understand your core market, your core, you can't just think you know them. You need to deeply understand who these people are, what their pains are, what they like, what they dislike. You need to know everything about them, not just what they want with your product, because knowing everything about them will really help you with messaging and kind of all those different things that are really, really important. Knowing your audience is one of the biggest things that I've actually learned over the years.
I suppose you would have known that audience almost a little bit naturally based on you being one of them.
I was them, yeah.
and I think that's very helpful for people when they get into business, if they can go into an area of passion. However, one of my questions would be, do you think one of the reasons that you overworked to an extent would have been because you married your skill set of being in the marketing space and business with a passion that was cheerleading?
Yeah, I feel that I had a reputation already in cheerleading and I wanted to make sure that I was doing the best for everybody, that I didn't kind of let my, I felt like if I failed, I didn't just fail the business, I would have failed myself. It would have my reputation that I built up. And the problem that happened during this time was I just became my job. I became the business. I became the success of the company. I felt that if the company was successful, then everything else was okay. Everything else would fall into place. So it became a 7 day a week. I knew these people so intimately and I felt their pain and what they needed and what they needed from me so intimately that I kind of made, I put everything in front of myself. You know, we had factories all over the world that we had to communicate with. I had different people working in different business units. And then I had, you know, like the people that I were working with in the UK who were the cheerleading coaches and the business owners, they were working outside of like normal everyday working hours because cheerleading happens after school. It happens in the evening. So then they're coaching all evening. So by the time they get home, it's 9 or 10 o'clock at night. So during busy season, I was up till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, helping people design uniforms and create all of their assets. So it was exhausting. And you're right. What happened was, is I, in the want and the with the best intentions in the world of wanting to actually do the best for this company, I kind of lost myself. And in what happens when you lose yourself is then you start making poor decisions within work. And that's never good. You have to have this really conscious, holistic balance. And people think that work and personal life don't mix. They absolutely do. You aren't one person when you're at work, but you have to make it work. And you also have to communicate that internally and set your standards as well.
Yeah, I think we can take a lot from that. And as I've told you, Rebecca, a lot of the listeners are in that demographic of young, aspirational people who maybe haven't experienced this kind of B word, burnout.
Yes.
One of the reasons I was so keen to have you on was that you've gone through this experience. You talk so candidly about it. You'd had what, by many accounts, if somebody was drawing up the job for Rebecca, would probably be that.
Job of my dreams.
Yeah. What you mentioned there a little bit around working 7 days a week, being up to all times, not really looking after yourself. What were some of the other things that maybe triggered burnout, and what would you describe burnout as?
Yeah, so burnout is something that creeps up on you. And I think we are in this culture, and I believe we're coming out of this culture, if I'm honest with you. But I believe, particularly in the last sort of 10 years, there's been this real hustle culture. You know, you wanted to say, yes, I'm working on a Sunday. You know, you wanted to say that you were traveling everywhere and not having a day off. It was cool to say that. You know, it was almost like a badge of honor to say, oh, I haven't had a day off for a few weeks. And unfortunately, that's kind of the culture and the mentality that we were getting into, and that everyone was thinking this was the right thing to do. So really what burnout is slow. It's not something, it's not a breakdown. It's not like having something really bad and you've totally broken down. A burnout is something that slowly happens over time. Now, people experience burnout in lots of different ways. But essentially what burnout is, it's, for me, this is my personal experience, because lots of people have it very differently. But my personal experience was I started to feel extreme fatigue because I was used to going and going and going and going, but I was having these extreme fatigue. I was getting intense brain fog. Now, brain fog is when you just can't make a decision. And, you know, I'm used to being very sharp. I can make very quick decisions. I tend to be very intuitive. If someone said to me, do you want a cup of tea? I wasn't able to make a quick decision. That's how it got. So these are some of the warning signs. I also started, my hair started to fall out. I started having breakage in my hair. I started having terrible gut issues. I started to have headaches, and all of these things, I was just starting to become unwell. And you can put this down to, oh, you're just tired, or you're working too hard. And you say to yourself, oh, well, I'll leave it because I've got a deadline, or I need to make a promotion, or just, we need to get my one. I need to get through busy season. And then busy season comes, and then something else happens. So the things to really watch out for is when you are pushing too intensely. Look, I understand I am a go-getter. That's how I see myself. I believe that that's, and I'm still that way. You know, don't get me wrong. I'm now not pulling back and saying I'm not that way inclined. I am just more conscious, and I'm just more intentional as an entrepreneur now. I am far more conscious of what's happening to me. I sit back, I take pauses. And what was happening to me at the time is I just kept pushing. And I call it the push culture, where you're hustling, but you are pushing. You're hearing the warning signs. You're not feeling good. You're making poor decisions. And if things aren't flowing to you, that is a sign. If things are not flowing in the right direction, this is a chance to say, I need to take a pause. And that's one of the things that maybe at the time I wish I had have done, just taken a bit of a pause. And I'm not talking about a week holiday. I'm talking about a serious step back from everything and just reanalyze where you are. Are you going in the right direction? Because your body tells you. It's not just your mind. It's not just if things aren't working around you. Your body is literally saying to you, this is not working. This is not working for anyone. Now, it's not just a physical thing, because as you know, as someone who's really, I want to succeed. You know, I want to make a difference in the world. I want to make a change, and I want that to be my legacy, that I've done good and I've made an impact and I've made a dent in the universe. That's what I want to do. But it should never, ever come at your own happiness. And if it does, that means it is the wrong thing to be doing. It is, the universe will tell you when it is wrong. And I believe that there's a physicalness, so that my physical side of things, I had all these physical symptoms, but also me pushing and pushing and pushing, and the business, and there was a couple of things happening in the business. It was all a warning sign from the universe and from my body. So those are the two kind of things. And a burnout is nothing to be ashamed of, but it is absolutely not a badge of honor. It is not something that you want to happen to you. And it's definitely something, if anyone is starting to feel a bit stressed, if anyone is feeling that they are maybe pushing slightly in the wrong direction, my advice would be to take a step back, which sounds awful. Believe me, when I was working 7 days a week and I was busy, if someone had told me to stop and pause, I would have been like, oh my God, absolutely no. But I promise you, when you take a second and you stop and you pause and you think about what's going on and you have some time on your own, a lot of answers come to you in the gap. And I did not give myself the time. I didn't give myself the love and the kindness. And then what happened as a result is I ended up having a burnout. I ended up having to leave the business, and I ended up having to start really what it felt like all over again. So that's kind of the essence of what a burnout is. It's not nice and it's not pretty, and it's definitely not a badge of honor at all.
I think something that is a real danger though for the kind of culture, like you've said, and I suppose you're definitely right that there's a little bit more of a well-being focus in the entrepreneurial community now, but also in the corporate world. But equally, sometimes when you are so hungry to hit a certain metric or reach a certain goal, things do get sacrificed along the way, like your well-being, mm-hmm. as you've shown through 7 day working weeks, mm-hmm. noticing that your hair was breaking, you had headache. Mm. The fact that you actually weren't functioning as well is actually the kind of the funny nature of burn or burnout symptoms, at least, because you're actually not producing the same quality of work, but you're working every bit as much, or if not more.
Absolutely.
Meaning that you're actually, like you say, maybe better to take the step back. And I know there's probably lots of different guises that this comes in, but the step back could be, like you say, am I actually pushing in the right direction in terms of where my actual career should go or where my happiness should go? But it could even be like a reset for a short period. I know you said a week's holiday is not really like the right way to do things, but a week's holiday and then reassess whether you would go back to anything like you've been on. So a week's holiday from 7 day working means that you don't return to 7 days working. It means you return, you're like, you've reassessed and rethought it through. Is there anything that could have saved you from the burnout and allowed you to continue in a job like that?
Well, I think, you know, like I said to you now, it's taken me a little while to kind of put myself out there again in such an intense way. But I know I have so much value to give that I'm not going to allow this to affect me. This isn't going to stop me from changing the world and making a difference and doing something impactful. But it took me a little while to get here. But the reason why I'm now able to go forward as I am, to work on the business that I'm working on, to work with Score App, to work on these incredible companies, is because I've now put a strategy in place to be able to notice these things. Now, I say to myself, if I'm feeling a bit stressed, or if I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed, or if something isn't flowing to me, like if something's not flowing like water, I know that I need to just take a step back. So now I say to myself, right, I'm practicing the pause. I'm going for a walk. I'm going to do these things. Like you said, you know, like there's small signs that you maybe need to just listen to. And it might be the universe saying, I just need to kind of tell you to do something in a different way. If you listen to those early signs on, very early on, you can prevent these things from actually happening. I think at the time, had I have known this strategy, or if I had been able to learn from someone who was open, I'd actually hadn't have heard of burnout. I didn't know it was a thing. No, I didn't know that burnout was a thing. And I definitely wouldn't have thought it would happen to me. You know, because you like to think you're tough, which I do think I am. You know, if it can happen to me, it can honestly happen to anybody. I'm very, very mentally strong. So, but I think that had I have known the strategy, and had I known it was okay to have these pauses, to be able to take a step back, had I have been more in tune with who I was, I think times are changing, Colin. Like, I genuinely believe that things are changing. And it's becoming more acceptable to say no, to be able to say, I just need this time. You know, and that's what really the lockdown has given us. It's been able to say, oh, my kid's in the next room and, you know, I've got to go and attend because there's nothing you can really do about it. So this is really why I created the Growth Tank Method, because I want to be able to say to people, you can have it all, because there's nothing worse than someone saying, when you deeply want something and you want to change the world, the last thing you want is for someone to say, yeah, but you don't work all these hours or don't do this, but you want to hear, what can I do to still achieve what I want to achieve? Because you don't want to be told no without any sort of strategy, because that's not going to work for people like us who want to make a difference in the world. So I've created the Growth Tank Method with the idea that it will speak to people like me. I would have listened to something like this because it's practical and it's not telling me what to do and disrupting everything that I'm building, but it's something that I know that I could implement and put into place that could be really, really easy. And that would have really saved me. And that's why I've created it. And really, Growth Tank for me is a passion project. I'm doing it as a course, but I want to be able to give it away for super, super good value. It's going to be really cheap to be able to do, because I want, you know, really my thing, my vision is that I am able to support and nurture spirited leaders who are going to create companies that are going to change the world. So a part of me being able to do that is to be able to give Growth Tank away for as little as I can. And that's something that I'm working on just at the moment.
Yeah. And I think having had the experiences that you've had and gotten to where you've gotten to, while also having that challenge along the way, puts you in a good position to build something that's relevant to people to try and learn from some of the mistakes that you made. And one of the big things that I always think about mentorships and coaching is that, do they have a roadmap that's maybe 5-10 years further down the road than me that would prevent me needing to do the full stint? So do I need to do the full 5 years of graft that they've done, or can I get there a little bit quicker? Maybe not in 6 weeks or 12 weeks, like some people are maybe suggesting, but you can get there quicker with the support of of a framework from somebody who's walked the walk, so to speak.
Oh, absolutely. And the recovery that I've had, like the last 4 years, you know, I actually didn't really want to admit that I even had a burnout till maybe a couple of years ago. And then it was only really when I was like, this probably happened to me that I was able to start doing stuff. But actually over the last 4 years, I've been putting this strategy in place. So really the growth tank is 4 years of my work of how could I have prevented this? How can I make life better now? And how can I stop it happening in the future so I can go ahead and make a dent? So that's really where this is now. So it is, but you do still would have to still do the work, because at the end of the day, nothing, you can't just learn something and it just be there. You have to, but this is why I call the growth tank method a lifestyle strategy, because it has to be a lifestyle. Like we've talked about before, you know, going to the gym, you can't just show up at the gym 2 days a week, stop for a couple of weeks. That's not consistency. That you're not going to change your body. You're not going to be healthy doing it that way. It has to be something that's consistent that you're doing all the time to make sure that you're looking after yourself. And it's exactly the same with implementing, you know, your own personal strategy. I just now look at my own, I'm more important than any strategy that I'm working on in terms of the businesses that we're working on, because if I'm good, then the businesses are going to be good, right?
Yeah, big fan of that mindset. And one of the things that you told me previously is that after your burnout prior to this period, you've mm-hmm. done some, and I don't know if the term's correct, but lower level, less taxing roles.
Yeah.
What was mm-hmm. the thinking behind doing that?
So after the burnout, I actually went to Thailand. I decided I didn't know what to do with myself because I was my role. So when my job went, I went with it, you know. And also bear in mind, this was my dream, you know, like this was my dream industry. I'd loved it all my life. And you don't have a backup dream. If you have a dream, you don't have a backup dream. And this is what I always thought I wanted to do. And I was wrong. And then I got it and I was like, oh my God, it's not what it was cracked up to be. And I ended up needing to just break away completely. And I kind of spent a bit of time alone and I just went and sat on a beach, if I'm honest with you. And what I started doing is, because I wasn't able to physically and mentally do anything else, I just started investing in spiritual books that were kind of really easy reading. I didn't want to go into like reading business books and stuff, which was my usual go-to. I was making sure that I always had a spiritual practice, which I kind of lost during this time. But what I ended up doing was I spent the last, and then as that started to help me slowly and the wheels started moving, I still didn't feel ready to put myself out there into another crazy role. I wasn't ready to go and do that physically, mentally. I didn't know where I wanted to go. And there's no point putting myself back into a position like that, into a role like that, where I wasn't sure if I wanted it. You know, and so now I started to listen to my body. I started to listen to what was going on inside. I started to listen to my intuition. My intuition was saying to me, just take a breath, take a second. And that second did turn into a couple of years. Like I wasn't ready. And if I was ready, I spent all this time over those couple of years investing in myself in lots of different areas, which is now kind of what I do on a regular basis. But it took me a while to get this strategy in place for myself. And, you know, if there's someone listening now, and this is something that I say, start putting this strategy in place now. You know, if you want to be in good mental, physical shape for you and your business and your family and your friends, the best thing you can do for everybody and your business and everything around you or your employer, whoever, is to really look after yourself. And that's kind of what I did over those time. I wasn't able to intentionally do something else at that time. And then slowly, so I was just doing jobs that I could really do with my hands behind my back, but they were easy and they were ticking along. But it really took until sort of the very beginning of last year for me to really change my mindset of like, okay, now I'm ready. Now I'm good. Because over those 4 years, I was still okay. You know, like I was saying, a burnout is slightly different to a breakdown. You know, you are just you know, you're just exhausted, you're just done. So it just took me a while just to get that energy back up, because you know, that is a part of my USP is my energy. So it took a while to get that back again.
Yeah, so in order for you to go back in at a level where you'd maybe been before and knew you could operate at, you needed to wait until your energy levels were replenished. You had a structure and foundations to know that when you do go back in, you had the systems to fall back on to enable you to continue to perform, rather than a short, fast burst and a burnout.
Right. And it could have happened again, right? So if I'd have just gone, oh my God, I'm not going to go, and I need to go back in at the level, I need to prove myself, I need to do this, I need to do that. I listened to myself and I listened to my intuition. I actually started to really listen to what I needed. And it's paid dividends now in what I'm doing. I'm now doing something now, which is what I always should have been doing. I was clearly pushing in the wrong direction for all the right reasons in the world. You know, a lot of people, whether you're doing something and it's not feeling right, you're doing it with good intent. Most people are doing it with good intent. So you should never feel bad if you change your mind. And changing your mind is one of the strongest things that you can do. It shows strength of character and it shows real maturity in what you're doing. So if you are doing something and you're like, I've put so many years behind this, don't worry. You know, you have the right and the opportunity to change your mind at any time. And I tell you something, if you really feel that that's maybe what you should do, start exploring it, because it could turn out to be the best thing you ever do. Because honestly, all the experience I've had, I've taken with me into what I'm doing now. So it's come with me. I'm just now doing something that is, and I literally did not see any of the stuff I'm doing now coming. Had you have told me that I would be doing any sort of like personal development type of stuff where I'd be really helping people, I would never have dreamt it. Had I been told that I'd been working in a super cool tech startup company doing what I'm doing now, I just would never have said that that would be. But actually all the skill sets that I've learned doing all the other stuff has just been amazing. And you've just got to spend the time with yourself and listen to your gut instinct and then be able to go and do it, because really, you know, deep down, you just have to quieten yourself and quieten everyone around you to be able to fulfill what you're doing.
One of the things that you said there really resonates with me around the kind of sunk cost fallacy. So almost thinking that I've worked for X number of years in this industry and built up this experience, I can't leave now. You see it a lot for gamblers. They chase bad debts with more good money.
Right.
You see relationships. People stay in a relationship. Oh, but I've been with them for 4 years. He's terrible for you, or you're terrible for him. And it's the same in careers, like you're saying there. Like, if you spend such a long time in a particular industry and maybe have a particular attachment to a way of working, but realize that actually by leaving and taking the skills that you've got in that space and applying them in an area where you would get more fulfillment, more happiness, or have a bigger impact on things that you care about, then you've got a winning combination there. And actually, sunk cost fallacy was my email that went out last week. So it's quite funny that you've kind of brought that up, where you've thought about all the time that you spent in that space, and particularly within working within the cheerleading industry, where you actually got a genuine burning passion, but still that it wasn't an industry that you should have worked in full time, which is a crazy, crazy thought to take in, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's crazy, really. But, you know, one of the things that I also think is so, so helpful is not being attached to the outcome. So now I was so attached to being the head of that company, and, you know, this is what we need to do. And this is success. This is how things are. This is how things should be. You know, whether you're in a job now, I need to get to the next bit, or this is how we should do it, or this is how things are going to work out. It's having that attachment to the outcome which stops you from seeing all the wonderful opportunities that are around you. They say you should be laser focused. I completely disagree with being laser focused, because laser focus means you are looking in front, you're looking, and you are not looking what's going on around you. Because I tell you something, what if a path opened up right next to you, which was the right path to go down? And you, because really what we can conceive, there might be something way better if we just had the opportunity and we opened our eyes to really what that is. I now, whether it be any sort of business relationship, a partnership, whether it be a company, an opportunity, I am no longer attached to the outcome. Now, what I am attached to is my mission and my vision. I know and my values. I know what my mission is, I know what my vision is, and I can list every single one of my values. If whatever I am doing does not align with any of those things, I do not do it. If the people that I work with do not align with any of those things, or my values, or they don't fall under that I do not work with them. So, but I also, even if an opportunity is absolutely amazing, and I've had a couple, if they're absolutely amazing and then they don't pan out, it doesn't break me. And I think the problem is sometimes we can be so attached to one outcome. We just need to be really open-minded, because the person that is always in the best negotiating position is the one that doesn't mind it going away, it not happening. You know, that is the person who is always in the strongest position. And believe me, when you're not attached to outcome, that's when better things happen. You know, even now, like, I've got a couple of things going on that I'm like, I really hope they work out. But if they don't, I know they were never meant for me, because whatever is meant for you is never going to miss you. So however much you push to try and make something happen, if it wasn't meant for you, you need to take your foot off of the gas to see if you can allow it to happen. Now, that doesn't mean not kind of working hard, and that doesn't mean, you know, not trying to make things happen, but you need to listen to that own inner voice. We need to be a lot more in tune with really who we are, rather than listening to how things should be. And that's probably one of the things I think that has helped me now make decisions and go forth and make put the strategy in place, that I'm not attached to what's going to happen. And I'm really open-minded. And honestly, Colin, it makes life so much more fun. It makes it so much more fun when you're not attached.
You can feel that in your energy. And I think when you're speaking there about removing attachment, putting you in a strong position, one of the other areas that can put you in a strong position is building a personal brand. And I know that you've really started to ramp that up in the last 2 years on LinkedIn, probably. And then,
not even a year, actually.
A year, no. Okay, fantastic. No. So, tell us a bit about how we can build a personal brand and maybe why.
Yeah, so actually it's funny. So in my early 20s, and when social media became a big thing, especially in a professional capacity, beyond your Facebook and stuff like that, I actually really took to it, because I knew that being able to have that window to your customers and to people and whatever it might be was such a fantastic opportunity. And because I am a millennial, that I was able to really see that opportunity really early on back then. So in terms of like a personal brand, I was really big when I was in my 20s. But what happened was I allowed whatever job I was doing dictate how I then went online, how I showed up online. I let my employer or anybody that I was working with really dictate what I was doing, and it is my biggest mistake. Now, I don't believe anything. I think all things happen for a reason, right? So, but if I was to do a do-over, which is something even now when I'm going out online, whether you're working for yourself now and you run your own company, or whether you are working for a big, large corporate that doesn't necessarily like you to have your own personal brand online, your personal brand is forever. You working for that business, or you working for that corporate company, or you or your friend or your business partner, they are not going to be around. I guarantee that your situation and your circumstance that you're in right now is not going to be the same in 5 years' time, let alone 10. So for you to then be dictated to as to what you put online, and you not wanting to go out online as who show up as who you really are, is a mistake. So I know so many people, they say that only 1% or something crazy of anybody on LinkedIn is actually creating content at the moment, is actually posting on, I think it was a weekly or monthly basis, something like that. And I thought that was crazy, but I know why, because when I was working for corporate companies like that, I was mute. I was literally genuinely mute. And it's one of my biggest mistakes. So last year during lockdown, I just decided that I was going to change that. And I was like, no, I've got my voice back. I know who I am. I know my values. I know my mission, and I know my vision. And I'm really confident in who I am and what I bring and the value that I bring to the table. So I wanted to be able to now say, right, this is how I'm going to show up online. And I'm not going to write online if I can't write exactly what I want to write. This is me. I am me, and I am my personal brand. So a personal brand is just that. It's personal. It's you, and it's going to be, and it's going to go with you forever and ever and ever. So when you do have that, where you are in a company right now and you're worried about posting, just know that you're not going to be necessarily where you are forever and ever and ever. And I now, through my personal brand, through writing what I want, through communicating all of these values and all of these things to my audience, I've been able to attract my tribe. I've been able to attract opportunities to me. I'm bringing people to me rather than me going out and finding them. And it has actually transformed everything. You know, my business partners that I'm working with and people that I'm working with now have either reconnected with because I've now had that voice online and I've had that confidence to do it. And I'll be honest with you, it was really, really, really scary when I first started posting what I wanted to post. There's some really vulnerable stuff at the beginning. When I started talking about burnout, it was so scary, but actually people started saying, oh yeah, I've experienced that. Or, you know, like I know someone that that's happened to. And I started to create my own tribe of people who were, you know, ambitious go-getters who wanted to change the world. And the only way that you're going to find your tribe is by being completely 100% yourself. And you have to do that through your own personal brand online. You don't get a brand through being mute.
Yeah, I can certainly speak to that. And I know that having worked at big corporates, there is social media policies and there's restrictions on what you should and shouldn't say. Mm-hmm. However, given that I've built a fairly niche Instagram in that space, I've never actually really been pulled up but for it. Right. And actually a lot of the time, particularly in sales roles, they're actually really impressed with how much the skills that you gain from that space help your presenting, they mm-hmm. help your ability to speak to people cold. And the fact that you've got a podcast is actually something that they actually quite enjoy in right. some respects. But one of the things that you've said in one of my favorite LinkedIn posts of yours is that personal brand is pandemic redundancy and recession proof. Mm-hmm. And that is certainly a message I would want anyone listening to take away, because as you said, circumstances will absolutely change in 5-10 years time, but your kind of brand online, your ability to be recognized for your skill set and what your message is, should hopefully remain there. Obviously things change with social media platforms, yeah. which ones you're on, but your ability to build an audience and build a tribe and speak to people authentically will remain, yeah. regardless of whether you've got 20,000 followers or 300 connections on LinkedIn. Right. You should still be sharing who you are and what you're up to.
Yeah. And actually, so when I was so sort of 18, 19, probably through till I was maybe 24, I was pretty active on social media and I was pretty active going to things like events when people actually used to meet in person back in the day. But I had a real core group of people who I knew from back then. And over the years, as I kind of pulled away from social media, I lost that network of people. And over the last sort of, so it's been almost a year. I haven't even really been back online for even a year yet. I think it was July last year. So it's really not been very long at all. It feels like it has, because I've had so much come as a result of building my personal brand back again online. But what has happened is so with the whole Clubhouse thing, I've reconnected with a ton of people that I knew from, you know, sort of 10, 15 years ago. And they say, you are exactly the same person now as you were back then. You are the same person. Obviously I've grown exponentially, but they know me as someone back then. I've reconnected with people who've known me 15 years ago, who are now sending business my way and asking me to partner with them on ventures because they knew me back then because of my personal brand back then. Your personal brand sticks with you forever and ever and ever. And that is a real example. I don't even know what I was like at 18, 19 years old. I had confidence of youth, put it that way. But, you know, it's one of those things that is such, to know that that happened and I went away for so many years and then I came back again, for them to have that affinity with me, to trust me with clients, to be able to say, oh, I've potentially got an opportunity for you. That is so strong. So to say that you've got that and you never know how your life's going to change. And if you've got that wonderful open mind about life, then having that personal brand and being able to make those really wonderful core relationships is just fantastic.
Before we dive into some of the things that you've been sharing online, particularly around Johnny Five Alive, you told me recently that there was a short period where you pulled back a little bit from LinkedIn again. Mm. I didn't realize that trolling or unhelpfulness was as evident on LinkedIn as it was on other social media platforms. Mm-hmm. What was going on there, Rebecca?
Yeah, so, and so for full transparency, I kind of went back online in July last year. So that was kind of like my thing. I went back on full force. I kind of went, right, now I'm coming back, I've got this voice. And I decided, so it started off with text posts. So I really got into writing. I love writing. I tend to write how I speak and people seem to kind of enjoy that way. And so it's nice to be able to change up your content. It's not always about video and podcasting. You kind of do a variety and do what works for you. But then I started posting things like videos and stuff like that. And as my videos got bigger and bigger, and as my following got bigger and bigger, so did the opportunity for people to jump into my inbox or hop under videos and say certain things. Now, I don't mind when people have something particularly negative to say or have a different opinion to me. Absolutely fine. You know, we all have different opinions. We're not all the same. That's what makes us beautiful human beings. But there is a way to communicate things. So, you know, that's one of the things. But what really happened was I actually started to get messages from guys in my inbox. And I was finding that this became a regular thing day in, day out. And I was trying to add value. You know, I've got a lot of value to give. You know, I've had a lot of experience and I'm trying to give away value, build my personal brand, help other people, connect with the right kinds of people. And then in my inbox, I was getting really unwanted attention. And even after that burnout, there's still pieces of me where I'm kind of like, if I see something that doesn't sit right or feel good to me, I pull back. And that's kind of what happened with social media. I got the ick and it made me feel bad. And I was like, I needed to take a pause to see if this was really the right thing to be doing. Because I was having, you know, great things happening outside of social media, of course. I was having amazing things happen outside of social media that I was really enjoying. And then I was coming over to give free value on my LinkedIn page. And I was then getting these messages. So it made me I practiced the pause and I took my foot off the gas a little bit of social media for a little while. When I reevaluated, it's one of those things and you can't avoid it, unfortunately. And I'm pleased that I did take that step back and didn't get to the point where it kind of affected me too much. And I had a great community of people that work on LinkedIn, John Palmer and all those great video guys who've kind of spruced me back up and kind of got me back in the saddle. But that's only really happened quite recently. I had to take that step back, which is something that I've been talking about, just to make sure that I was doing the right thing. Is this the right direction that I should be going in? And actually the answer is yes. You just need to make sure that you delete those people instantaneously and you can't help it. For all the good people that you are attracting and that you're helping, there's always going to be a little bit of that. But that's kind of one of the things from the burnout, those that lingering, oh, is this the right thing to do? Oh, is that really the right direction I should be going in? But I'm pleased that I did it. And now I've got back into it again, only recently. LinkedIn has sort of hurt my algorithm a little bit. They're punishing me profusely for having a bit of a hiatus, but...
You're back in the game now, and I suppose
back in the game.
Practicing that pause was definitely a positive thing because it allowed you to make that sensible decision.
And I feel more confident now than ever, you know, so that's the thing. Before I was a bit like, am I doing the right things? But now I'm going on there and going, no, this is 100% right. So it's always the right thing to do because it actually gives you conviction. It gives you confidence in what you're doing.
Yeah. And you've spoken before about safe posts. So almost when you were in that headspace, going on and posting something quote unquote safe because it would draw maybe a negative reaction or maybe an unsolicited comment that you're not welcoming. Whereas now you can go on and just be
myself. Better. And what I was doing is I wasn't posting any videos. So I was trying to avoid it. And that's completely the wrong thing to do, but I needed to see that was the wrong thing to do. You know, we're not perfect people. We have to keep learning and keep growing, but I absolutely, it was the right thing to do at that time because it's given me real conviction now in that I'm doing the absolute right thing. And now I'm going to dive straight back into doing videos because that is really the way that people also like to connect with me. So I'm going to continue to do that. That's, you know, TBC.
I look forward to seeing them when they're out. But in the meantime, tell us, what does feeling Johnny Five Alive mean to you?
Yeah, so feeling Johnny Five alive, it's something that I've actually said with my friends for years and years. And it's really, when someone says to you, how are you today? Maybe it's a very British thing, but how are you? Are you okay? Your natural thing is to go, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. If someone says to you, you know, how are you feeling? And you respond back with, yeah, I'm feeling Johnny Five alive. It literally makes people smile. It changes up the energy in the room. And it's just something we always used to say when I was growing up as kids. And I think Johnny Five, there's an 80s movie of it, but it's kind of a little play on Cockney rhyming slang as well, Johnny Five Alive. And so it's something that I have always said. I actually put it in a post right at the beginning when I first started writing last year. And loads of people underneath said, oh, I love that, feeling Johnny Five alive. And it just became a thing. And whenever I could, I started putting it into posts and people just really took to it. So now I'm kind of associated with that Johnny Five alive energy, feeling really good, feeling really positive. And actually someone said to me the other day, you know, when I think of you, I just say to myself, Johnny Five alive, you know, feeling, and I'm happy with that. If that's my personal brand, that people feel good and energetic when they think of me, then I've really kind of done my job. So
I was about to say that the fact that when you build a personal brand, people should associate certain things. Mm-hmm. You and I were speaking about personal brand before. There's certain things that people will always tag me on Instagram stories because they know, yes, that that's what Colin does, or that's what, yeah, he drinks, or that's what he eats. And that's fantastic to have something positive associated with you. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you'd rather somebody associated J5A with you than, I don't know, Rebecca said this and I didn't like that.
Yeah, and I didn't like it. Yeah.
It's totally different. But how can we feel Johnny Five alive? Because that's obviously a kind of mindset or a feeling that you try to embrace as a person, you mm-hmm. try to share with your friends when they ask you. It kind of picks you up. It's almost like you say, if sometimes forcing a smile can actually lead you feeling happy, can't it? So yeah, by saying, oh, I'm feeling Johnny Five alive, it almost mm-hmm. it manifests itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, yeah, it's one of those things that you have to, I believe, and part of the growth tank method is that we are very unconscious every day. A lot of the actions that we do, a lot of the actions we take, driving to work, you know, getting into work, making a coffee, you know, saying goodnight to the children, whatever it might be, you know, whatever your circumstances are, most of the things we do it on autopilot. And I believe that to be really intentional and thoughtful and conscious with what you're doing, and having that, you know, and that really can, I want to be good. I want to feel good all the time. You know, my default setting is energy, happy, and feeling good. And that is the majority of how I am all the time. But how I've got to that is, you know, I make sure I do the things that I want to do with the people that I want to do in the environments that I want to do. And I chase the things that I want to chase. And it's very intentional. So being able to feel like that is, you know, when you're feeling a bit of a lull, putting on your favorite music, you know, when you are feeling a bit exhausted at your desk, go for a walk, phone a friend, do whatever. I genuinely believe that you are in control at all times of your emotions. If you can master your emotions, you really have made it as a person. You know, like, people think you have to get this to make it, you have to achieve that to make it. That isn't achievement. Achievement is actually mastering who you are. Because if you master who you are, then you are the best mother, the best sister, you're the best, you know, you're the best CEO, whatever it might be. Because if you are not good as a person, if you haven't mastered who you are as a person, then all those other things fall away because you've not really nailed life. So really having that energy and having that mindset, it is thoughtful, it is intentional all the time, making sure that you're in that space. So, and it's having that strategy. So really how I've got myself into this space is by my mindset and by saying I'm not interested in anything that is not following my values. And, you know, a little bit like my personal brand online, I have 5 content pillars. I've got 5 things that I know that I care about and I want to talk about. And I stick to them. And if it doesn't fall underneath them, then I'm not doing it. If there's a certain group of people that don't fall into my values, I don't work with them. It sounds like I'm very hard, but it's because actually I'm a really soft person and I'm very compassionate, and I have to be really hard to get really the best out of life, best out of myself, and be the best I can for everybody around me. And actually, it's not, it's strength, and it's actually being compassionate to yourself is being compassionate to everybody around you, because you can't pour from an empty cup.
Yeah, that whole serve yourself first piece is absolutely massive. Like, there's a reason they tell us to put on our oxygen mask first on the plane, isn't there? Because then you're able to support those around you. And it's clear that, like you said, you're actually quite a soft, caring person.
Yeah.
But you need to have a framework and a support system around that to enable you to align that where it needs to go. Otherwise, you expose yourself to hurt. And I think a lot of people listening to the podcast can probably relate to that, maybe in relationships or friendships. But we're talking about this on a wider basis in all areas of life, and it's certainly
all areas.
Applied. You spoke about pillars there for your content. You've also got some pillars around your kind of well-being as well, don't you, when it comes to like the different things you do to look after yourself. What are some of those that you would share with the listeners for somebody who's wanting to be like you, a high achiever, but also conscious of not pushing it too far?
Yeah, so some of the things that I really look at now is I've got something which I can sort of consider a foundational level, and to kind of have really good solid foundations, whether it be through work or as a person, because I don't believe the two are in silo. I believe that you have to have really strong foundations, and that is knowing thyself. And I do a lot of exercise around, what do I want? What do I really care about? Who am I? You know, and these are questions that we all ask each other all the time, but it's something that we really should always be keeping at the forefront. So knowing that, also your circle. Now, one of the greatest things when we're younger, and I'm the worst because I love my friends and I will do anything for them. But if you are not in the right friendship circle, if you are not surrounded by people that are going where you are going, then you are going to stay where you are. And I, you know, it doesn't mean that you ditch every single one of your friends. That's a bit ruthless, but it does mean that you have to kind of say, maybe I don't need to spend so much time with these people. One of my biggest tips was I actually wrote down a list of 20 people that I spent the most amount of time with. And then I also wrote down the top 10 things that I cared about the most. And I put each one of my friends underneath those things. And there was a couple of sections, one of them being work and entrepreneurism and that time. I didn't have very many friends that were kind of going where I was going. So I needed to pull back some time from other areas of my life and invest time in trying to find people that are going where I'm going. And that is one of the biggest exercises that I do. Is this person aligned with my core values? Are we going in the same direction? And it sounds really ruthless, but you have to think that way. You have to make sure that your environment is right. You know, are you sitting next to Sally in accounts and is she talking negatively all day? Is that really going to get you where you want to go? You know, be honest with yourself, is it? And it's not going to change. You have to take those solid actions for yourself. There's lots of other things as well that I believe diet, exercise, making sure you look after yourself. Your spiritual practice is one of the biggest things. I literally, every single day, I have a gratitude journal. I journal. First thing I do when I get up in the mornings, I thank the universe. I thank them, you know, and I'm not an airy fairy type of person, but I genuinely believe that you really need to be grounded. So having that spiritual practice, there's absolutely loads of little things you can do, making sure that you have adventure in your life and fun and excitement. All of these things keep you in balance. If you're not having fun and excitement, but you're doing all these other wonderful things, then you're going to become out of balance. And that's sort of with the growth tank method. I've got 10 things that you kind of look at on a consistent basis and say, oh, I probably need to fill up my growth tank in this area. I need to kind of probably maybe concentrate a bit more here. We're never going to get it perfect, but if we're conscious about it and we have that awareness, then we are going to be a better rounded person. We're going to be going in the right directions and we're going to be successful.
I'm very glad you used the word awareness, because I think that's what a lot of this comes down to. And like you say, that sounds quite ruthless where you're mapping out who you're spending your time with.
Yeah, it does.
What areas of their life do they contribute to and where are they going in that respect? Mm-hmm. But it's down to awareness. And then from there, we're going to go with the I word, intentional.
Yes.
Because we're going to spend our time with who we need to based on where we're all going together. Mm-hmm. It might be a group of friends that you spend time with when you want to dance on tables, as you've told us that's happening when the lockdown ends, Rebecca.
Yeah.
but it's certainly important that we're aware of which friendship groups serve which interests and who we
speak. And look, you know, like when I said that, I mean, I'm at an age where I've got a lot of my friends have got very young children, and I love my godchildren so much, you know, but does it mean that I need to be spending weekdays with them at the park? You know, is that really what I should be doing with my time at my time of my life? No, I should be spending it maybe with them on the weekend. You've got to proportion your time accordingly. And what I was doing is I just wasn't being proportionate, and I wasn't really doing things for myself. And to do that exercise is really it's quite eye-opening, because all it means is, it doesn't mean you need to get rid of anyone, it just means you need to be proportionate with your time to get to where you're going. Equally, if you are going to spend too much time on work and your job, you're going to burn out. So you need to have that balance, and all these different 10 areas of your life are so important. You know, all of us want to laugh and have fun, and we have to be intentional with that, because if we've got busy deadlines, we're like, when are we going to have a bit of fun? You know, we're all looking at lockdown now, we all can't wait to go out and have a bit of fun and dance on tables with our friends. I certainly can't, but it doesn't mean I'm going to do it 5 days a week.
Yeah, exactly. That and you mentioned gratitude journals. Now, yeah, many of the listeners of the podcast will be laughing at this point, because maybe about 18 months ago you would not have caught me within 10 meters of a gratitude journal, but I've been journaling for a year now, and I can't advocate enough using the 6 minute diary. My Amazon affiliate link is get me a tidy wee investment, actually, in terms
amazing.
Of a little bit of a fund to get people buying it through all the time. But for me, it genuinely has helped me frame a lot of the things going on inside my head where I'm more self-critical. And I think as a higher performer and somebody who wants to be better, like yourself, we can be incredibly self-critical of like maybe what didn't go well so well during the day, or maybe what I could have done more of. And instead of framing that as a criticism, you can frame it as, well, I didn't allocate time here today, so maybe I'll allocate time here tomorrow. And just switching how we speak to ourselves in that respect. So I'd be very interested to know what kind of things appear in your gratitude journal.
And actually, that's one of the things as well that I am so much kinder to myself these days. Like, I am best buds with myself. You know, we're on a level now. And it is one of the things that you can be so self-critical. And actually, when you write things down, one of the things I've also realized as well is what you say outwardly to people. When I'm having conversations with friends and people now, I don't talk about other people. I really don't like saying should, although I did notice myself say it a couple of times during this podcast. But you know, things like that, being very mindful of your words. You know, it's not just your actions, you putting out into the universe, saying things, even saying things to kind of follow along with the crowd or agree with someone. No, don't do it. Don't put those out into the universe. It's the same as writing things down. We want to make sure that we're writing our thoughts down and then realigning ourselves. You know, we can course correct. Course correcting ourselves is actually a massive, massive skill. And it really helps you grow as a person as well. I love gratitude journaling. I'm not as great doing it every single day, but I have actually made sure that I have a really rigid morning and evening routine. So I really make sure I get up at the crack of dawn. Usually I get up at the crack of dawn, I work out, I come back, you know, I haven't looked at my phone at this point. I'll sit there and I'll meditate. I will make sure that I make time for myself even before my day starts. You know, I'm at my desk by 8 a.m. I haven't lost any time. You know, most people think, well, I don't have the time for that. You're just not getting up early enough, and you're just not going to bed early enough. Like, I don't believe in no sleep. You know, I believe in sleeping.
you're preaching to the choir here in terms of early start, but also early bed. And having those morning and evening routines is absolutely vital in order to reach peak performance. But one of the things that you said before that was about speaking negatively and putting kind of bad things out there, and those almost leading to other things. And I think one of the things you've told me before is about gossip being like one of your kind of red lines, where I try not to gossip. Like, is that linked to just making sure that you're always in a positive headspace, you're saying good things?
Yeah. And also as well, you know, like if you're talking badly about someone or yourself or anything like that, you know, as women, we like to, you know, have a little chat. And I just want to make sure that I am being completely aligned with my core values at all times. There's no time off. I care like if I'm talking negatively about other people, or if I'm saying things negatively about myself, if there's any if there's any of that going on, I'm putting that out to the universe as that's what I'm allowing. You know, we can't just say, oh, well, on these days or the weekends, I can do those things because that's when I'm spending time with certain people and we can talk how we want to talk. It's not like that. People will find that less you talk about other people, the less that they'll talk about other people to you. And it improves your life. And it's the same with yourself. I will openly say when I'm talking to someone, if I say something about myself, you know, I think I said something about me not working out as much during the third lockdown. I've been running a lot, but I haven't been actually, and I'm like, and I said something and I actually, before she said anything, I went, actually scrap that, pretend I never said it. That was wrong. I shouldn't have said that. And I was saying that about myself. And I, even though I shouldn't have been saying it because then it manifests it into reality, I'm being negative towards myself. And that is not something that I want because then it allows for everyone else to do it. So that I believe that you should really always be in that space. These little things add up. You know, it's not something, you can't change things overnight. You can't just go, oh, this is, I'm going to write a gratitude journal. Oh, I'm going to talk like this. I'm going to do that. It has to be a strategy, a lifestyle. It has to be consistent. And it's, you know, it's exhausting when you think about it. Oh God, I've got to do stuff like that all the time. But actually when it starts to work, it's so awesome and it's so fun. I am happier now than I've ever been. And, you know, when I think about it, I could have been in a different place, maybe with more money at this point or whatever it might have been, but I am happier now. And that is because I've now put this lifestyle and this strategy in place. And I believe that as a result of that, I can really do big things and I can help other people in the right type of way. You know, we've got to, like we were saying earlier, we've got to strap our seatbelts in first and fill up our own tank before we can even consider helping anyone else or our companies effectively.
Yeah, I love that, Rebecca. And I think we've covered a tremendous amount in that respect in this conversation, all the way from your background and your career up to the burnout period, what that led to, strategies we can do to prevent that, building that personal brand online and the massive benefits that you've seen as well as others can see from that, all the way through to some of the things around the Growth Tank Method and Johnny Five Alive. In terms of leaving us on a good note, where's the best place for people to connect with you and some of the places that you want to direct the listeners towards?
Yeah, of course. So the best place to actually connect with me would definitely be on LinkedIn. So if you message me on LinkedIn, Rebecca Hollis, I tend to be brilliant in my inbox if it's positive. So the best place to get me is on LinkedIn. I've also got a personal website, rebeccahollis.co.uk. So you can connect with me or find out a bit more information there. And then Growth Tank Method should be out in maybe the next sort of 6 weeks. So I think this is out kind of in May. So something around that sort of time. And then I've also got Score App, which is Score App is an app for connecting you with your audience and to be able to generate leads. So there's a couple of different places you can connect with me, but the best place on a personal level, which is really what we're here for, is definitely on LinkedIn and in my inbox.
All of that will be linked in the show notes below, Rebecca. Awesome. Thank you very much for joining us. If you've enjoyed this episode, guys, please take a screenshot, pop it on your Instagram story, fire your feedback to me at call.cambro, share it with a friend that needs to hear this episode, particularly if they're a bit of a high achiever that needs to look after themselves a bit more, or even somebody that needs to get themselves posting on LinkedIn. And I'll be back to speak to you all again very, very soon.